Welcome to Contagious Conversations,
where automotive industry leaders dig below the surface and discover what it takes to shift the culture and perception of automotive retail.
Let's get into the conversation. Today, we're excited to share this space with Danny Zaslavsky, managing partner of VinQ and general manager of Country Hill Motors.
All right, man, Danny, we have been chatting just off of this and about even just things like taking trips and vacations and things like Digital Dealer and all the wonderful things that we get to do in life. And so I am excited to hang out and have a conversation with you today and share a little bit about what you're doing, not just through VinQ, but through the dealership and also the culture that you're encouraging in automotive. Like we'll just dive right in. So, but first what I want to hear is like, where did you find auto, or did it find you, or what was your kind of origin story in coming up into the business?
So auto definitely found me. So my parents came over in 79 from Ukraine, and my dad, one of his first jobs was as a shoe repairman, as a cobbler. And so in Kansas City, there's this intersection of I-35 and Johnson Drive, which is right now where an IKEA is. So everybody in Kansas City knows where that spot is. But before, at the bottom of the hill was this little shoe repair business that my dad rented a small space out of and fixed shoes. And then eventually he fixed enough to buy a part of that building and then eventually the whole building. But it's still very small space at the bottom of a hill on Johnson Drive. Well, my dad walked up that hill, and at the top of the hill was this old, what looked like an airplane hangar. And on the end of that airplane hangar was this small office with 10 cars sitting on the lot. And that's where my dad bought one of his first cars. And Josh was the guy that was there selling those cars. And there was just him and this other dude named Bobby Lingle, who was kind of the get it done guy that was fixing them, detailing them, and you know, putting them out when Auto Trader came by and took pictures and put them in the magazine. So my dad, after he bought the car, said, "Hey, you know, my shoe repair business, I just hired my first employee. Can I come up here and sell cars with you? Cause I like cars." And Josh had only been in business for a few years at that point. And that literally was how the business was born. Well, I was a kid, I was born in 83, and this was in like 86, 87. And in the early 90s, in the late 80s, early 90s, I would spend my days at the shoe repair business after school, because it was like, that was my daycare, right? Yeah. And so I'd follow my dad up the hill and sit at Country Hill Motors. And I was born into the business, and eventually started, you know, as a bored kid, you're just given things to do so that you're not idle. Otherwise, I'd be finding trouble. And so I started washing cars, and I started like standing underneath cars and checking them out. And so the business really found me.
Wow, that's a crazy story, man. That's really cool. So then you've kind of traversed into kind of running that operation at this point. And then also, and I think one of the cool things that recently you've been doing, or at least, you know, recently figuratively in the grand scheme of automotive and also your journey, is this whole VinQ world of things, challenging the way that we merchandise and source and acquire vehicles. And that's the real reason why we're hanging out on a podcast. So for those of you that don't know, we do this thing called Pitch Tank on a new app called Clubhouse. Who knows if it's going to survive? It might not. But whatever it is and whatever it is for right now, we do this thing called Pitch Tank, where vendors get to pitch dealers and decision makers and all that type of stuff and share the new vision and the opportunity that they have to support dealers. And Danny came on and shared with a whole bunch of people VinQ. And he won that day. And so is on this. So we just want to be fair. And again, like, this isn't a no pitch zone, right? And VinQ is an incredible product. But so how did that journey, going from like the dealership and then bringing tech into it and moving into where like you can marry tech and dealership, and how did that happen?
Well, so let me tell you this cool story first. So when I was a kid, My dad needed to buy our first computer, and my dad went to Sears on Metcalf, which here in Kansas City, and he bought our very first computer from this guy named Matt. And he said, "Hey, dude, do you know how to use this thing?" And he goes, "Yeah, kind of." He goes, can I pay you? Can you show up to the dealership? Can you install it?" And he goes, "Sure." So Matt goes to the dealership, puts this computer in, and then Josh, my dad's business partner, said, "Hey, can you write programming?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm learning." And he said, "Well, I want to build a program called Sell Some Cars." And Matt goes, "I could do that." So he wrote our first point of sale program, and then said, "Hey, what is this? Like, how do you guys get cars?" And this is early in the mid 90s, when internet was starting, you know, Netscape 96, as things started going online.
Yes.
And he goes, how do you get stuff online? He goes, "Well, we don't, you know, we have to, it's like one by one." So Matt's last name is Watson. He started VinStickers that turned into VinSolutions. And we were one of the, like ground zero for that. And so Matt's been my friend this whole time. And he's a few years older than me, physically, but emotionally and mentally, he's like eons ahead of me, but he's always been a friend and somebody I've looked up to. And he is who later connected me, because I've always wanted to be in a space where industry meets technology, and we can find that cool bridge in efficiency. And so I grew up in the car business. I actually went to KU, got a human biology, minor in chemistry, until I figured out I was very
perfect.
I was afraid of blood, so I didn't stay in it. So I stayed down the car track and have had a blast. And then about 5 years ago, there was this, you know, big shift, this big problem with kind of commoditization and then having to use so many systems to solve the same problem. And Matt connected me with a guy who had a startup at the time called DealerQ, which is now VinQ. And Chris got it to a really cool spot, but he needed an SME, a subject matter expert, right, that could come in and say, okay, what are the problems that we're dealing with today? And so together, we've been working on what now today is VinQ, and its sole purpose is to be one system. One system to be at a ground floor level inventory management that then can bring in all these really cool insights that matter today, especially in this crazy market that we're in, and solve problems like acquisition from an inventory management standpoint. And so we call it our core. And from that core, we can constantly create efficiencies. For instance, like going to different channels to acquire inventory and be able to appraise and do all this cool stuff in the middle, and then get them online really quick and keep that those gears churning.
Yeah, I think that's super important, because I mean, the same reason why in the mid 90s, it was like, how do we get cars online, right? Well, one at a time. Well, yep. So like I say this, right? The ability to sell cars comes from three places, and the central place is inventory. Yeah. Do you have them, and does everybody, and then the next piece is marketing, which includes merchandising. Does everybody know you have them? And then lastly, once they know you have them, can you transact? Right. Yep. And so there's the levels, and you're exercising on two of those core levels, which is really cool, and doing it in one space. So I think that's a technology. That's a miss that we've had in our industry. Cause we're like, how many processes, how many things can we do up here? And we forgot about like this core issue that we haven't solved for, which I think is what you're trying to say that you're solving for.
We are. Yeah. So one of the areas that we've recently been solving for, as an example, because again, inventory management at the core. So we take any vehicle, right? It's instead of looking at it purely from a price to market, cost to market standpoint, we look at how many VDPs does it take to sell this car? Like that old owl that was licking the lollipop, how many licks does it take to get to the center, right? And so when you look at a budget spend, and then you can start allocating dollars, whether it be to cars under 15,000 or SUVs or trucks or high value targeted cars, and then apply the logic of what vehicles do we know are gonna leave the market quickly. And instead of messing with price as the lever to be able to get rid of a vehicle, let's mess with eyeballs in order to get rid of that vehicle, right? And you can do that with low market day supply cars and high market day supply cars. And it creates this really cool a synergy between what an algorithm can help you identify and what a human can help you understand. So that way you can move that inventory faster without just spraying and praying, hoping and praying that you're going to adjust a price, make a good VDP, and it's going to go away. It doesn't always work that way, right?
Yeah.
And so in our system, that's one of our skills that has really helped dealers sell inventory. Obviously, it's a seller's market right now, but there's still segments of inventory that need to be able to go. So going from the idea of, hey, let's run as fast as we can to sell cars to let's be as efficient as possible to get a higher grossing turn.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what a lot of people think is, yeah, it's like, if we can just get more of everything out there, everything will fall in. But the reality is like, if we take a money ball approach to our vehicle acquisition, our merchandising, our advertising spend, then we reduce expenses and increase profitability by dialing in. So I think you're dead on. And when you can look at both of those next to each other, instead of them being separate, right? Where typically you've got like, well, let's just talk about teams. You've got like your marketing team is over here at the dealership and your inventory team is over here at the dealership. And then the GM or the owner or whoever it is in the middle, turning over here to the inventory team, like, get me more inventory, and over here, sell me more cars. But for some reason, these never talk, right?
Yeah.
And this is a solution that says, it's impossible for you not to talk now, right?
It's impossible because it's one file, it's one car, it's one system, it's one appraisal. And that appraisal allows you to see all the data in one place. And then how many eyeballs are you attracting? And what are the levers to pull in order to get that vehicle in front of the right people to make that acquisition?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the I love when you said levers, right? Because so I was listening to Jay Abraham, marketer, you know, the big dude, right? And he's talking about like pulling tiny levers. And a lot of times what we do in the automotive industry is we're like, big lever, put a commercial out there, right? And instead of going, oh, there's just these little tiny levers that we can pull in inventory.
Yeah.
Because
we've been taught to be campaign driven our whole life. Like, what campaign are we doing this month? Are we giving away tire and wheel? Are we giving away remote start? Like, what's the thing we're doing this month? And I think that has run its course, especially for people, and I'm going to say it, of our generation that are willing to pay to get what they want, right? Versus my dad wants to find a deal. He wants a deal. He wants the free, you know, tote bag, and he wants the umbrella, and he wants a discount. He wants the feel. He wants the perception. And that's two very different tracks.
Yeah, for sure. And so man, I couldn't agree more. And you know that I love everything that you guys are doing, of course. So, Lean, now talk a little bit more, because especially about how you started to sense this market shift, and also a shift in what your need was at Country Hill Motors, not just from like merchandising and inventory analysis, but now moving toward vehicle acquisition as a strategy. Yeah. Like on a hyper local level.
Totally. Yeah. So I'm going to attack it from kind of two different angles. From an acquisition standpoint, we knew, right, what are the acquisition channels that we could buy cars from? We could buy them from the auction. We could buy them on trade. We were innovative and did dealer network, where we literally went to dealers and bought their trades. I called it war, wholesale, auction, retail. So if we were buying it for wholesale because it was too expensive, it went away. If it auctioned because it was not meeting our criteria, or retail off of our lot. And we still buy from like local Harley stores. We buy from metric bike stores and power sports stores and RV stores that trade for cars all the time. And we're not paying what we call stupid tax, because we're competing with other experts in the lane just to get bid up and then to pay auction fees, transportation fees, post-sale inspection fees, all that kind of stuff, right? And so that's one of the channels. But we always knew that the highest ROI is when we work with the public. And we used to be on Johnson Drive. And at that time, we were kind of isolated. But then a development company came in and said, hey, we want to build an IKEA here. So we're like, well, shoot. But we want to stay in business. Where are you going to put us? And they said, how about this spot? And they showed us a spot. And it was literally across the street from a CarMax. And we're like, cool, rising tide, let's go. Yeah. So we built a brand new building on the corner of the highway, right across the street from the CarMax. And right away we figured out, well, wait a second, they're buying a ton of cars from the public. And they're doing, I mean, we know that we do well with trades. And then just like COVID put a spark in everybody's butt to get a lot more aggressive when it came to processes and digital retailing and so forth. The unfortunate thing that happened in my life 6 years ago is my dad had a bad stroke, and he was the guy who was buying the majority of our inventory. So it was easy for me to sit back and go, cool, I'll just worry about marketing and selling them.
Yeah.
Well, when that was no longer an option, I quickly realized that I absolutely hated going to the auction. I don't like standing in lane. I never smell good afterwards. I feel awful. I feel like I paid way too much. I spent the whole day prior making an auction list and thinking I'm going to buy all these cars to buy a fraction of those. And then other cars that, when I was upset, I'm like just emotionally bidding stuff because I need inventory.
Yeah.
And so it was just a bad formula for me. And I know now that I wasn't alone. So we started looking at how do we just buy more cars off the street. And at the beginning, it was just pen and paper. I knew that I needed somebody that wasn't a salesperson. I recognized that right away because this was more of somebody who needed to be a good customer service person, a good communicator. And so I landed on a guy who used to be a teacher. And I shook his hand and I said, we're going to figure out a way. Like my goal is to buy 100 cars a month from the public. And he goes, it's a big goal, but let's figure it out. Yeah. And we bought 7 the first month. And we bought like 10 and 15 the next month. And I started figuring out, wait a second, there's vendors out there that will sell me acquisition opportunities. Cool. Let's see what the ROI is. Then we track those. And then we said, cool, what can we get organically doing an email marketing campaign? We did that for a while. Then we hooked up with KBB ICO and we said, okay, cool. Let's figure out how many I can get here and how many we can convert to trade. And all of a sudden, all these consistencies started being born, right? And when you track those, then you can all, I mean, this is, you know, any scalable business will think this way, but it was revolutionary for us and exciting for us because every idea was like a new idea. Right. Yeah. And we felt like we had just stumbled upon magic and now we're going to like protect it and build it. And so eventually we started to find consistencies like how many acquisition opportunities can a person handle in a month? How many can they buy? If we hire another person, how many will they buy? And how much? And so then you can start to scale by having new VBC vehicle buying center coordinator reps in your store. Now we have 5 people in that department buying 100 to 125 cars a month, and we're buying what we want. And so now we're getting really fancy with it and saying, cool, inbound is one process, outbound is another process, and incentivizing them not to just to buy cars, but to buy the right inventory that we want, yeah, that we know will turn fast. And that also gives us a ton of curb appeal. Okay. What's today? Today's Monday, Tuesday. Today's Monday,
yeah.
Monday, right?
Monday. Yeah, it's
Monday. 21st. So Saturday, and these were VBC cars. We sold a bright yellow. You can still see it on my website. They're sold though. These were VBC buys, a Plymouth Prowler, a 2011 Maserati convertible, a Ford Raptor, and a Nissan Maxima. So those are all like totally different weird cars that I would have never bid in lane. Like I would have looked at those and go, save it for the Mercedes store, right? I would have never taken a chance on those cars because I also would have been thinking is like, why are these at the auction? There must be a problem with them, yeah, right? But no, I got them off the street and I bought them right. And they attract a ton of attention to the lot because they're cool cars. They sold super fast. They grossed really well, not because we sold them for over what they should have been sold for, but because we bought them right and avoided stupid tax and unnecessary reconditioning because auction cars, I'm sorry, they're just not the same grade of vehicle that you'd be buying off the street. And we made customers and took trades and created service and, right? So it's like, there's so many cool things that were born out of that opportunity to just do business and be quote unquote innovative, which to me is like Einstein's old quote, enough common sense is genius. Just have enough common sense.
That's amazing. Yeah. We, and here at Nelson Auto Group, we've seen the same thing. We're buying anywhere between, and we've got, you know, five stores and a couple brick and mortars, but we're buying anywhere between like 300 and 400 cars off the street.
Oh my God.
And it's absolutely amazing. Like those, again, like you said, they're right in service that day. We know the car, we're the only one bidding it, and they turn quickly. They, you know, we're able to care for those customers. Plus, it's a whole new, yeah, it's a whole new family member that we get to have, yeah. Right?
High five.
Boom. We're in it together, right? In different areas of the country. So super kudos. And you've equipped your teams with it, not just like the vision and the mentality, but the technology to do that. And, yep. And I'll do the sales pitch and you can too, if you're listening or watching, yes, you can equip your teams with that for sure. So,
I guess I'm bearing the lead. I mean, that's exactly what we built into VinQ, right? So VinQ does all that now. And that's yeah. What's been so cool of taking that mechanical process and turning it into, a real solution in the system to be able to intake yep. all those opportunities, see the appraisals, manage the appraisals, CRM, communicate with the consumers, and then bring in all the outbound cars, all the cars that consumers are listing on Craigslist and Facebook and Auto Trader and Cars.com and CarGurus and eBay and all these places, and then take my reps and set their sights on the vehicles they should be acquiring for my lot because the system assists them with
yep.
attracting that inventory.
So now, instead of just like going after everything, you have speed and specificity in the way that you are acquiring vehicles, which is, man, how great is that? Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I love the mentality, and I hope someone picks up something from that, whether it be a new process or a technology, and recognizing that there's other ways to do this. But it takes a dedicated team that's not just your sales team, that is intentionally trained and focused on this new way of business. It's, you know, I like Danny, you maybe have heard me talk. I talk a lot about like the whole marketing team, right? In this whole new arena of people that we can attract to the car business. But this is it. This is another place. It's like a new entry point into growth, career pathing, leadership, you know, leadership mentality that, you know, 5 years ago we didn't have. We just had a used car manager, right? And now it's like, no, this is an avenue into this incredible industry that we can hire a new subset of people that have the opportunity to support and scale within our business. So that's
I heard you talk about that at Digital Dealer on the main stage, on the keynote stage. You were saying how cool it would be for you to wake up in a world that allowed your kids to be proud to work in the automotive space. Yeah. And I heard that because I have twin 7-year-old boys. And I agree. I want the space to be a proud space to work in, not a curmudgeon-y space to work in. I want the space to be an honest space to work in, not a space that carries shame. And so the things that we're doing as automotive leaders gets us there.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's going to be the transition to the last thing, if you're okay with it. And I want to talk to you in particular about what it looks like to create a culture of specifically inclusion, right? However much of your story you want to share, but I would love for you to share about what that looks like and the leadership that you've been able to grow into through your dealership, through your city, through your state, through your region, but more specifically in automotive, and how we in automotive can care more intently about being an inclusive industry that creates career paths, no matter where people come from in their history or their path or their personality or who they are.
Yeah. So this has been a really cool spot in my life. And I was literally born into the opportunity to kind of learn this, right? So I'm Russian, I'm Jewish, and I'm gay. So it's like the trifecta. And so there's been a cool opportunity for me to either use those to grow and be a part and help others grow and be a change leader, or to kind of set back and kind of watch and let other people, right? I have a friend who lives in Utah who has a very different story. He actually lost his son to suicide. And a lot of it, the Mormon church is certainly not had the best track record with homosexuality. And he said, I could have left the Mormon church, but I decided to stay in the Mormon church and be a cause for good and help open people's eyes. So I was lucky enough to be invited to work on the Mid-America LGBT Chamber of Commerce. I was a part of it for 7 years, and I got to be the president of it for 4 years. And its mission was diversity, inclusion, and equity. And that specifically the difference between inclusion and equity is really important. And if you don't know what the differences are, I'm not going to explain. I'm just going to tell you to Google it, because it really changed my world in understanding how to give people equity within your business organization, right? Because we're not all coming into the business with the same amount of opportunities. Or if you look at it like a field, some of us are closer to the goal than others, right?
Yeah.
This is kind of a difference in managing style. My dad liked to come in, and God bless him, because what got us here won't get us there. So what got us here was my dad coming in and saying, this is my idea, do it. Go into the next department. This is my idea, do it. And then this tornado just kept going and going and going. But without my dad's energy, the machine kind of stopped. Hmm. Well, it's hard to scale that style of business growth. So instead, and you know this, when you start shifting in showing up and valuing not just what you can do, but what you know and how you can share that knowledge, all of a sudden scale just happens, because people get empowered and they start believing in their worth. And all of a sudden that equity begins to build. And and that's truly the definition of karma, because that comes back to the leadership of the organization, because everybody wants to be a part of something bigger than themselves. And that organization begins to grow and begins to shine. And so the biggest gift of my life has been to be able to be a part of cultures that embody that philosophy. So that's what I try to do. I try to come in, share my knowledge, and I don't really, I personally have always been attracted to people who I can learn from. It's never scared me. I've never been afraid of big egos, and there's plenty of them in our industry. I'm an internal optimist, so I see the good and I learn from it, and I go, cool, I can use that. Actually, here, check it out. I have a book just getting there. This is a really cool book. This is a bunch of really cool people that have accomplished things, and there are little mini stories in here. But that's, I think the secret lies in the journey, not in the destination. And I know that's cliche, but it's so true. Work hard, but celebrate that success, learn from it, and then do it again, rinse and repeat.
Yeah. I almost decided, and probably someone else has probably coined this term already, but you know, in the automotive industry, we always say always be ABC, always be closing. Right. Yep. And I want to coin this like hashtag or something that's like ABL, and always be learning, right? Always be a constant learner, willing to set aside your previous expectations or viewpoint or story formation for the potential for someone else to share with you something that they carry, that they learned, that they've experienced, that's maybe different than you, and that because you've now been able to listen and learn, you get to share that out. And then all of a sudden the reciprocity of the learning and the sharing, especially within organizations, it's strengthening for everyone, because everyone you don't have to tell someone that they're empowered. They feel empowered.
They feel empowered. And isn't it wild? Because I know you've experienced this, because I don't know you that well, but I'm getting to know you better. And I imagine in your lifetime, and this probably happens regularly, people come up to you and they just see you as a leader. They just see you as somebody they can ask advice from. They can just see that you're somebody that's a safe place to talk to. And it's because of that intention that you set forth in your life. There's so much magic that happens just out of showing up that way.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. And I hope that I hope that many people sense that. And I hope that more people understand that you don't have to be in a place of leadership to be a leader. Right. And I think that that's where, if I can encourage the industry and encourage along with you, the industry is that there are so many more leaders that are in places of leadership in our industry. Yeah. And if we can give that to more people, if we can share that to more people, then the lift from the bottom will be so much quicker. And it'll empower more people to do really cool things like what you're doing with VinQ and in these really neat spaces. So, man, I'm going to wrap it with that. I really appreciate you just sharing your heart, sharing your technology, your automotive, your leadership journey. And I'm cheering for you, man, like crazy, and your team and everything that you have your sights set on. So, yeah, for sure. Do me a favor. I'm going to do the typical podcast thing. How can people connect with you? What's the best way to do that? You or your team, if they'd like to do that.
Yeah. So the whole team's on vincue.com, VINCUE.com. You can just literally email me direct, Danny@dealerq.com, DeLerCue.com. Vincue.com, I'm on the team page. Email me and I respond right away. But this has been, it's really cool. This isn't the average podcast, Kyle. So I think you know that, but you've done a really great job with questions. I really appreciate it.
Well, cool. Well, I appreciate you coming on and can't wait for continued conversations. Check it out.
Thanks so much for joining our conversation. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure and share it out. We can shift the culture and perception of automotive retail together. Until next time.